Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We're glad you could join us once again today, and want to just mention that as every week, just because you hear a strategy you like or you hear of an opportunity to invest, please don't rush out and undertake either one without touching base with your current financial, legal, real estate, investment advisors, etc., to make sure that you heard correctly and that, in fact, your facts and circumstances might benefit from undertaking said strategy. And if you don't have any advisors currently that can do that type of analysis for you, feel free to go to our website at baplanner.com. That's BEAPLANNER.com, and top right you'll see a next to the top right you'll see a link to forms. If you'll visit that page, I've got a few forms out there. If you'll even just do the first one, it'll allow us to take some time to chat with you on the phone, because we'll know a little bit more. We'll know enough about your facts and circumstances to at least have an introductory phone call, which you can schedule right after you've submitted the forms by going to the far right link called Call, I believe is what it is. I'm not looking at it. And we'll be happy, again, to undertake a short call with you to tell you how we might be able to help you achieve your goals and objectives. Let's go ahead and move to some news. I added a few articles this week. I've stepped outside the box a bit, for an accountant anyway, on one of the articles. I want to go ahead and talk about it first. I think... We've got a Major League Baseball player that's worth a heck of a lot of money, but I don't think he's gotten some very good tax, maybe even financial advice. Maybe not. Maybe, you know, who am I to criticize someone that gets a $700 million contract? But Mr. Shohei on Ohtani, I believe he's Japanese. I may have that wrong, but I believe he's Japanese. Has signed a $700 million contract with, he's Japanese. I was just looking at the article now. And joined a new team over the weekend, the Dodgers. And it's the largest sports contract in U.S. history. But it's not so much the amount, although the amount is pretty amazing. Yeah, we'd have to admit, or I'm assuming you would agree. But it's the way it's structured with some massive deferrals, which apparently were his or his financial team's suggestion. And apparently he's going to take home just $2 million per season before taxes, I guess, over the next over the 10-year span of the contract. So it's a 10-year contract. And for those of you that listen to this show, you realize that he's going to get caught right smack in the middle with the tax train that we keep talking about coming down the path. Only, yeah, you can rest assured he's going to catch it broadside with the dollars being the levels that they're paying him under this contract. So effectively, he'll get $20 million in, paychecks over the next 10 years, and then he'll get a final paycheck in, let's see, 2043, and that's going to be, or no, I'm sorry, he'll get another six, so he gets $2 million a year for 10 years, and then between 2034 and 2043, he gets $680 million. So however you want to calculate it, it's a lot of money, but it's a lot less when the tax train arrives. And we know it's coming. Why do we know it's coming? Is it political? Is it Democrat? Is it Republican? No. It's math. And you won't have the federal government, unless something drastically changes with our policies here in the near term, there will not be enough money left in the discretionary budget to pay the interest on the debt fully. And I'm not sure how much of that starts getting dragged or left behind, but it's a bunch. And for those of you that don't know or don't understand or hadn't heard the word yet, our interest cost just this year will rise to the $1 trillion mark for the first time. $1 trillion in interest expense for this year. And it's truly staggering in terms of what that number represents. And if you look at our annual fiscal budget, that will be the third largest expenditure. The first largest is Medicare, which is now just right at $1.5 trillion. It's about $14 billion shy of being 1.5, so it's a healthy number. The Social Security piece of the annual, this is the annual federal budget. The Social Security piece is about $1,382,000, so not quite $1,400,000. It's right there, coming up close behind Medicare. And then defense spending is currently $832 billion each year, and then year to date, interest on the debt is sitting at $697 billion, but it will scale to $1 trillion by the end of the fiscal year. It's just startling, absolutely startling. And for those of you that like to break it down, you know, you don't want to just look at the forest, you want to look at the trees. How about $100,910 per citizen? That's man, woman, and child. It's $259,000, almost $260,000 per taxpayer. Again, that's your share. If you're a taxpayer, your piece of that overall deficit. Now, this is just the cumulative deficit that we acknowledge and we would put on the government's balance sheet. This isn't the total. You'd need to add about another 150. Let's see, the unfunded debt is another I believe it's another 130 trillion or so. So not even counting that, because we can still change that. You know, we can still raise the Social Security age, I suppose, to, I don't know, 85 years old. You know, how high would you like to raise it? It's not going to change matters a whole heck of a lot, not enough to be the policy change that we need. And before you Democrats start yelping about, oh, we just need to raise taxes, or your Republican counterparts say, well, no, we just need to cut spending. We need to quit providing all the foreign aid that is out there and quit forgiving all the student loans, et cetera. None of that stuff even moves the needle slightly. Doesn't even move the needle. We've got to have we need to have change that revamps our policies. What do we allow? What do we feel the government should provide? How we're going to spend the money, in other words. And until we do that, that there's really nothing that is going to change or turn that train around. And, you know, lest you don't think it's coming, start Googling U.S. federal deficit. You're going to notice more and more articles show up, more and more YouTube videos. We've got one out on our resources site, which, by the way, that's where these news articles are. It's baplannershow.com. And if you'll go to the resources page, then under that there's two links for videos and one for news. And you'll see a video from a week or two ago. I believe it was 2 weeks ago. Representative Swikert from Arizona that breaks down. It's got some really nice charts. It's about a 30-minute video. It would be worth your while to look at it. If you have any hesitation as to what makes up the issues, what frames the discussion, that'd be a good video for you to take a look at. But bottom line is, it's across the federal budget that we've got issues. I've just called out some of the biggest categories because that's, let's see, if you add those three up, that's one, two, three, four, about, well, to be about $5 trillion out of the, I think we've got, well, I'm not sure what the total collections are this year. I want to say they're in the $5 trillion range. But we've got a lot more spending. These are just the highlights, if you will. But in any event, so I think about, again, the celebrity, Mr. Otani, and I think, well, you know, $700 million, let's assume the rates stay the same. That's only, his tax is only about, well, living in California, of course, you got to account for the state income tax, but you're looking at federal of roughly, I guess, $280 million. That's quite a little deposit that he'll need to make with the nation's treasury. And so I guess we shouldn't feel too bad that the superstars make that kind of money. And unfortunately, we don't have enough guys like this, especially imagine a foreigner coming to the U.S. to pay his fair share of taxes. That's you know, pretty pretty nice scenario. We need to find more of them, is what I would suggest. And we don't need to be too hard on helping them gain entry. We need to bring as many of those guys in as we can, guys and gals, to help us pay down the deficit. Or just, heck, let's just start with covering the annual budget. That would be a nice benefit right there. Let's see. Oh, great article in or on the justthenews.com site this past week called "The $1 Trillion Club: Leaders in Congress Who Helped Amass the $34 trillion in National Debt." And, you know, I, unfortunately, there's not enough room on the page to give them all credit, but lest you think it's a us versus them scenario, they start off this article talking about leader Mitch McConnell, you know, the Republican, the longest serving Senate Republican leader in history. He was elected the Republican whip of the Senate in 2003. He started as GOP leader in January 2007 when the national debt was approximately $9 trillion. And, of course, the national debt is now fast approaching $34 trillion. The USDebtClock.org site shows it at $33,918 billion, and it's going up somewhere between $6 and $8 billion a day. It's insanity. And so we will be over the $34 trillion mark in, what, a couple weeks, I guess, or maybe 3 weeks? So, in any event, let's see, who else is in our trillion-dollar club? After Mitch O'Connell, by the way, he's helped raise it by $25 trillion since he became leader. And I mean, I've seen him many times, you know, on the TV news coverage and, you know, C-SPAN broadcasts of the U.S. Senate, things like that. And suffice it to say that McConnell has never seen a spending bill that he didn't like. And he's got plenty of company, but I don't recall ever seeing him. He may talk about fiscal responsibility, but it's only to sell additional spending on some other front. And so you know, again, I give both parties equal credit. It's not Democrat and it's not Republican. It's the collective, let's spend the money without a whole lot of thought about how we're ever going to pay it back. Chuck Schumer is also on the list. He was first elected Democratic leader in 2017 when the national debt was up to $20 trillion. And so the debt's risen close to $14 trillion more since that time. And he's remained the head, I'm sure, as you know, of the Senate, the Democratic side of the Senate. Actually, he's leader, the majority leader in the Senate right now. Richard Shelby, another Republican, another gentleman that is known for his pork bell spending. But anyway, he became chairman of the Senate Appropriations Committee, which is where you want to be if you want to spend money. That's the hot seat. You get to decide, at least in the Senate, what we're going to appropriate. And he took over in 2018 of the committee when the national debt was only $21 trillion, so it's gone up $13. And let's see, who else are we going to give? Oh, Patrick Leahy, another massive spender. He was in the Senate from, let's see, Senate Appropriations Committee in 2021, served until 2023. That was only a $3 trillion increase during his term. But he's been in the Senate forever. And, you know, he's recently retired, but big spender. And then, of course, we've got Ms. Nancy Pelosi, who goes back to 2007 when she first became Speaker. The national debt was about $9 trillion. She left in January 2023 when it was $31 trillion, $22 trillion increase. And there's a couple others here, not as noteworthy as those, but it's just amazing the amount of money that's been accumulated just in our lifetimes, less than our lifetimes, probably half our lifetimes if you're my age. And it's just remarkable. But we're going to keep talking about it. Why? Because there's some things you can do to protect yourself. I talk to people literally daily about what they can do to sidestep that train that's coming down the track. And unfortunately, if you're a working guy or gal and you get a W-2, you're going to get spanked the hardest when that train finally arrives. And, you know, if there's a way to restructure your income streams, even into the self-employment world, 1099s, that has some opportunities that you no longer have as a employee. Let's do this. Let's go ahead and take a quick break, and we will return with more of the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, momentarily.
People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living. Forget to throw in a little forgiving and love along the way. You better get to knowing, showing a little bit more concern about where you're going. There's a word unto the wise. You better get to living.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Like the song, Bobby McGee.
Dreams and fake dreams,
and there are many just like me
with big dreams and fake dreams.
Okay, welcome back to more of this week's Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And before the break, we were talking more and more about the deficit, the U.S. federal deficit. And I'm sure there's listeners that get tired of discussing that, and yet it's probably the single biggest financial issue facing the rest of your life, at least as an investor. And, you know, taxes, as you get to the retirement age, taxes become, for many people, your largest expenditure. If you're a real estate investor, they can be your largest expenditure. It depends on what niche or corner of the real estate arena you operate in. It also depends on whether you're active, whether you're passive, and, you know, we don't get into much of the discussion of those rules. You know, most of our clients are passive investors, so, you know, that is a role that fits most retirees' lifestyles, perhaps more than getting out of bed in the morning to go run a beat-up Class C apartment building, but to each their own. Some people excel at the latter, but others would like to invest their money and sit back and reap dividends out of the cash flow, which lately have been a bit constrained when you look at what's going on in the economy. And, you know, it's not just the interest rates. It's the cost of insurance. It's the cost of concessions. I've got an article on the list regarding concessions that are starting to show up again. In fact, it's the first article in the current section, and we'll take a look at that momentarily. But, you know, and then lastly, if the interest rates don't catch you and the property taxes going up or the insurance going up, you know, these are operational expenses. If that doesn't catch you, the concessions don't eat into your cash flow, well, then you've got your competition. You know, do you have any idea how many units are being delivered in some of these major markets over the next 12 to 18 months? It's a huge amount of new deliverables. And who do you think's going to go into those units in large part? It's going to be people that are in your buildings now. You know, if you're an owner and you don't fight to retain those tenants. And, you know, I look at some of the amenity set in the new buildings that are being built, and you got to ask yourself, if you're a renter, which more and more Americans are becoming these days for assorted reasons, it's not just because they can't afford a home or they can't qualify for a mortgage. How about some of the amenities that they're putting in these newer apartment builds, where you can't build a house that has some of these amenities at a price that you could afford it? It's amazing some of the product that's hitting the market. And so if you own an older property, you may be challenged to fight for your existence, literally, by upgrading your property or, again, making concessions. And, you know, when you look at what some of the concessions that are being offered are, in fact, let's go ahead and take a look at that article. Let's see here. It's in the Wall Street Journal. Renters are starting to get concessions from landlords again. This, let's see, December 10th. And, you know, it has a couple illustrations about one lady was, you know, looking to rent a three-bedroom house and started looking around at the apartment market. Combined with the home markets, the single-family rental home market being a bit tight. In fact, she said that 2 years ago the market was so tight that 46 other people applied to rent the same home. That's amazing. That's when you know you're in a landlord's market, huh? And but anyway, this June, she found an ocean-facing two-bedroom apartment in, she's in Virginia Beach, Virginia. $2,100 a month rent was lower than she expected, and the landlord even cut the security deposit by about $1,000. So she was delighted. And, you know, you got to wonder when or how many Americans are feeling like they were sold a bill of goods with Madison Avenue's concept of home ownership and apartments or rentals don't look all that bad in many cases. And again, I'm telling you, from what I've observed, you can actually live in a nicer place for most people. Some people it doesn't really matter, but for most people, you can live in a really upscale setting for so much less than you can buy. And I think that's a good thing for all of us apartment investors. These are positive trends, or it can be. It's not necessarily a carte blanche scenario, but it sure is nice that we've got such a volume of renters. And I guess the real challenge is, how do we make sure they stay in our buildings as opposed to our other neighbors? So anyway, I am starting to look more carefully at the financial reporting that comes through on the properties that our clients are involved with, and that I'm involved with as an investor, to see what that loss to concession number looks like, or loss to lease, loss to concession, two different concepts, but nonetheless, it's the contra account to the full market rent, just to see how that starts to tick upward. I'm sure it will. Most of these older properties, you know, most of our clients are invested in Class C buildings. You know, these are buildings that are built back in the 60s, 70s, maybe early 80s, and they don't have necessarily the latest, greatest amenities, may not have covered parking or garages, things of that nature, but you know, they're largely affordable compared to a lot of the newer properties. But in any event, I noticed this article also discusses single family landlords that are being challenged, and even the single family owner crowd is starting to be more creative. There's a mention about suburban Atlanta, where some landlords that are renting single family rentals are pledging free lawn care or housekeeping services in an effort to gain tenants, and gift cards of all types, etc. So it's a dog-eat-dog world, I guess, to coin a phrase that Cliff Clavin, or Norm, I think, used to use on Cheers. It's a dog-eat-dog world, and I feel like I'm wearing milk-bone underwear, I think, was how he described that. Not a pleasant thought, but in any event, it's reality, and the fit survive, and you got to be out hustling to find those opportunities. Let's see, we had a speaking of renters trading out their single family homes, that was another Wall Street Journal ad here. Wall Street Journal. That was in Globe Street. Fewer renters are trading out for single family homes, and let's see, there was a couple of points I wanted to discuss besides just the fact that the desire to trade out, apparently, to buy a home has slowed considerably. Well, that's in large part based on mortgages, and I know we're seeing that in assorted markets. I've got some properties in the San Antonio market that we've got competition that, you know, we used to worry about people leaving to go buy a home, where now that's not a concern. I mean, it seems like the mortgage companies are very elusive in terms of making loans available. And, you know, what I would say the biggest thing I see in the sales market is if you're a seller, owner finance is your ticket, if you can owner finance. And, of course, if you've got an existing mortgage with a lien, that's going to be hard for you to pull off. But I tell you, the folks that are still doing well are the owners that have the ability to owner finance. And, you know, I had an argument with an appraiser recently about how owner finance, I say it provides value to the overall value of the property. They say, well, no, you can't quantify that. I tell you what, you go ask a buyer if it's got value and how much the value is. A buyer that's constrained on their mortgage options. And I think you're going to find there's a lot of buyers, myself included. I mean, I purchased a 8-unit apartment building where I got almost $1 million in owner finance provided by the two sisters that sold the property to me. So don't tell me it doesn't have value. You may not be able to put it on a appraisal report, but it's got value. And, you know, it may not fit the category of what real estate appraisers are told they can use to justify their valuation. And that's fine. I understand that. But to ignore the value, when I'm talking to a buyer, don't tell me that that's not a point to bring up as to the value equation of your property. And I'll tell you, you know, I hear realtors, I really like the way some realtors approach the concept of price, because not all of them are just clueless, which, you know, unfortunately, that's true of every industry, but a lot of them understand that unless you can support the value, you may not get the buyer. Not every buyer appreciates a Mercedes, and that's why Chevrolets sell, Hyundais sell, etc. Not everybody ascribes value to necessarily a higher price, and of course nobody ascribes value because the price is higher. It's just typically the level of the gratification or satisfaction may be higher with a Mercedes than it is on a Chevrolet, at least for some buyers. And so, you know, the challenge in the real estate business, as I was explaining to this agent, was that, look, don't tell me that I as a seller or one of my clients as a seller needs to lower their price. When you've only had a property on MLS for 30 days, I'm not willing to say that you've trolled that pond in enough spots to let the fish see that lure. It's not necessarily a question of, oh, it hadn't sold in 30 days. How about it hadn't put in front of the right fish swimming by that they might otherwise pounce on that opportunity? And so I'm less willing to, and this particular agent I was talking to said that 25% of her listings sell in the first week, I believe, 7 days. And it's like, well, I told her, I said, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you're leaving money on the table for your sellers. If you're selling properties that quickly, how could you have possibly had a chance to let it, you know, be on MLS long enough where enough people saw it, where you got a few no's at higher levels of pricing, so you know where the edges are? And, you know, it's the definition of value is a tricky topic that, you know, you don't necessarily happen upon in the first 7 days, at least my experience has been with real estate. Let's do this. Let's go ahead and take another quick break. We'll be back momentarily with more of the Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. I was gonna be rich no matter how much it cost. And I was gonna win no matter how much I lost. Sacrifice. I was gonna be rich no matter how much it cost. I was gonna
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be A Planner Show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough to take control and make the
okay, welcome back to the final segment of the Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And we were just talking about the number of renters that are choosing to stay in the rental market as opposed to moving to a single-family home, trading out or trading up. And so I had forgotten there was an article I meant to put up, which I've since done so while we were on the break. And it's about, it's going to be right at the top of that current week list. And it's called Class B, referring to Class B apartment product, offers apartment investors the best balance. And it's got some good points in here that I guess kind of helps explain what's the difference in Class A, Class B, Class C, etc. And when you look at the, I guess, the large majority of the assets that our clients invest in, they're investing in the C-class property because, theoretically at least, that's where, for those that are trying to achieve a value-add strategy where they're buying an apartment building that's high deferred maintenance or it's in need of an amenity reset in an effort to get the rental rates up to market, quote-unquote, which then allows the property to achieve a higher net operating income, which then in turn leads to the ability to be able to either refinance and pull investors' capital out to return to the investor in a relatively short period, 2 or 3 years maybe sooner, or it allows you to sell and move on. But bottom line is, when you look at what's going on right now, the class that has the least cushion to withstand the higher interest rates that are, you know, being variably raised as inflation has continued, and the Fed has recently paused the interest rate increases. But I don't know. You read articles. There's just as many articles that say there's going to be increases as decreases in 2024. I did add a video this week that says interest rates are being forecast to be cut in 2024. Well, that's, you know, one approach, or that's one projection, but you can find at least as many going the other way that say we're not done, that the underlying rates still need to adjust to slow down certain facets of the economy. And, you know, they keep talking about, are we going to achieve a soft landing or not? Well, you know, that's debatable. And if we're going to have a soft landing, that would seem to imply that the interest rate adjustments going upward are over. But I don't know. I mean, obviously, nobody knows. And I don't think too many people would tell you that the Fed has done a remarkable job of reining in inflation. And I think more and more I'm seeing economists indicate that, hey, maybe the Fed should stay out of the way and let's see what the market does with supply and demand being the driver of interest rates. And I don't know. I'm conflicted because there's a lot of the machinery, let's say, that I think happens behind the scenes in our economy that needs someone that's pulling the strings on occasion to direct some of that activity. But in any event, the point here of this article is that the Class A pricing premium has eroded to just 32 basis points and 42 basis points versus Class B and Class C properties. And effectively, it's been more sensitive to certain market issues over the last 3.5 years than the Class B and C. And the Class C level, let's see, let me hone in. So this was shown to flow from rents being relatively susceptible to deliveries exceeding net absorption and flowed down through the property income. And so effectively, the Class A group had the most systematic risk. So as new units are coming on, tenants are switching to new units, and then the lower Class A quality properties are suffering accordingly. And I suppose they're trying to appeal to the Class B folks, and that's a big leap in terms of moving up from a monthly rental from a Class B to a Class A. So in any event, but to go further, they say the flow from rents being where, you know, the deliveries have exceeded the net absorption, and so it's creating some downward pressures. It says this is due to Class A having to compete with the latest deliveries, unlike Class C. So Class C isn't really affected by the new higher-end Class A properties as much because their tenant base doesn't qualify in most cases to live in a Class A. Okay, they don't qualify, or they don't choose to spend their money. And so the Class C shows the most property level uncertainty due to its higher and more unpredictable operating expenses. So it's not totally devoid of being affected, but it's a different issue altogether than more competition being dropped in your lap if you're a Class A property. So the question becomes, where do you invest your money? And the gist of this article, if you want to dig in on it, is that the Class Bs have the best balance in terms of these competing, you know, sensitivity to new deliveries, and the Class Cs, tenant delinquency issues. There's no question it's a different class of tenant in the Class C properties versus the Class Bs. Okay, so just I've got about 3 or 4 minutes left. I want to circle back to the tax dilemma that we have, and I'm going to reiterate again what you want to look at between now and certainly start here over the next couple, 3 months, is the notion of getting your pre-tax retirement money over to Roth 401s or Roth IRAs, so that you will not be taxed. You don't care what the tax rates go up to. 0% times even $1 million is still zero tax. That's where you want to be. And collaterally, if you do that move, that Roth conversion, after you roll your money over to a self-directed account, and then you're investing that account in real estate private partnership syndications like we consult on, you've got the ability to convert those funds at a fraction of the underlying invested value, because you've got investments in private companies. Private companies are valued differently than stock market companies that have a tradability factor. We have no marketability. We can't trade our apartment partnership investments until the lead partner decides we're ready to. And so you don't have any marketability. You also don't have any voting control. Two big factors in establishing the value of an ownership interest in private companies. And so that's what allows us to convert pre-tax assets without having to sell them. We don't have to sell them to make the valuation calculations and to advise you on how much that you would pay. And I'll promise you, it's the least expensive way to get from pre-tax over to after-tax, and it's also collaterally one of the highest earning asset classes from a wealth creation standpoint. So you're killing two birds with one stone. But anyway, hear the music. We're at the end of the show. I hope you can join us again on Sunday, 7 a.m., right here on AM 700 KSEV, and we'll pick up with more tax and real estate news and try to help you understand where to jump in if you're interested in that asset class. Thanks again for tuning in.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.